behind every great beer is an even better story. Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. In this episode of the Beer Healer Interviews, I'm pleased to say that despite significant connection problems with New Zealand, I'm able to bring you this interview with Behemoth Brewing owner, brewer and resident giant Andrew Childs. Apparently all of New Zealand was watching Netflix on the night of our interview and it caused all sorts of problems for us, even resulting in me finishing the interview on my own. But more on that later. For now, let's just get into the story of a gypsy brand shaking things up on both sides of the Tasman with their cheeky beer names and labels and brewing amazing beer. There are big changes coming for Behemoth, so I thought it would be a great time to find out more about their plans. So here's my interview with Behemoth Brewing's Andrew Childs. So welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, Andrew Childs.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, mate, it's great to have you here. So it's Behemoth Brewing in New Zealand and Chur Brewing in Australia, and we'll cover off on that later. But for now, let's take you back to your first love, studying law.
Yeah, love's a pretty strong word there.
Yeah, God, mate, what the hell? I mean, how'd you put so much time into becoming a lawyer and just to turn your back on it for beer?
Well, that seems like kind of a silly question, really. Beer's an easier thing to love than law. I know I probably got into law for probably the wrong reasons. Just like to argue too much and read too many John Grisham books. But it's, it was 5 years, law degree is a long time, but I definitely found a love of beer during that time. And while I was overseas towards finishing my law degree, discovering the world and the world of beer, it's a big world. And it caught me relatively early on. And I decided to quit law and get honest and start making beer for a living.
So what attracted you to beer initially?
So the culture of beer really fascinated me. I started collecting beer glasses from a very early age. I had well over 100 of them when I was a teenager, running around on my paper run collecting beer glasses. I didn't drink beer at the time, but I just was fascinated with the culture around it, with the branding and everything that went around beer. And I've been involved with it pretty heavily in more recent years. And it's a great industry to be in.
Yeah, look, man, I'm not here to judge, but collecting beer glasses at the age of 13 is kind of a weird thing to do.
Yeah, it is. I guess it is, but I just like collecting things. My little brother actually collected shot glasses.
Oh, really?
But he... Yeah, he was my sales manager for a while, but he never got into spirits. So it was just a fun thing to collect, and I think it was probably a warning sign of what I was meant to be doing with my life.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Now, I've read a bit about your story of how you got your start in the beer game, and I must say that you must be the only person that I know to actually stay true to a New Year's resolution.
Yeah, I didn't stay true to any of those other New Year's resolutions. So the story is I was at a New Year's party and I got everyone at the party to make me a New Year's resolution.
They made them for you.
And one of those was they made them for me.
Right.
And a good mate of mine, one of my best mates, Paul Harrison, said, "Well, you've always wanted a home brew, so why don't you get into that?" And within a few weeks, I was home brewing, and the rest is history, really.
What were your first home brews like? Were they kit and kilo or all grain?
They were all kit and kilo to start with. It wasn't kit and kilo. It was all malt, so I didn't do the old kilo dextrose type of thing.
Oh,
but
right.
it was some kits with some extra malt, light malt extract.
Yep.
And some steep specialty grains and all Cascade. We call the first one Learn to Fly Pale Ale, which we are opening a new brew pub in Auckland, and I think one of our first beers might go heart right back to that and do a Learn to Fly. I was thinking that we were going to have all of our beers named after Foo Fighters songs to start with, but then I realized that would have been somewhat limiting.
Yeah. Are you a big Foo Fighters fan?
I am. I'm a very big Foo Fighters fan. The fact that I haven't done I've had some references to Foo Fighters, but I haven't done too much. But, there's a lot of beer still to make, so who knows what time will bring some, I'm sure.
Let's digress for 1 second. If you're in the brewery, what music are you playing other than Foo Fighters, perhaps?
It's very different. Like, because we contract brew at quite a few different breweries, I am in different breweries all the time. So everyone's taste in music is very eclectic, from, soft jazz to death metal. Usually I'm somewhere in between. I'm kind of a classic rock man, really.
Oh, I was talking to Dave Padden from Akasha Brewing just recently, and we had this same discussion. We both settled on Aerosmith as being one of our faves.
Yeah, nice, solid.
Nice, yeah. Sorry to interrupt the podcast. In the words of Transvision Vamp, I don't want your money, honey. I want your love. I'm not going to ask for a Patreon donation because that's not really why I do this. I just want you to help me spread the craft beer gospel. Whichever podcast service you use, if you like my interviews, please like, subscribe, follow, rate, and share my podcast with your friends. It all helps to spread the craft beer message throughout the community, and in turn, hopefully can help those of you out there who make a living working in the industry. That's all. I'll let you get back to the podcast. So anyway, let's get back onto this. The next step after you started homebrewing was a bit like a fairy tale, really, because you entered a competition with your homebrewers, and as a result, you actually got to brew one of them with Yeasty Boys. Is that right?
Yeah. So the Celia Way Brown Ale, so it was named after the ex-mayor of Wellington. Wellington's a very coffee-centric city, so we did a coffee brown ale.
Nice.
So it was actually an American brown ale, so relatively hoppy, but with a bunch of Papua New Guinea organic. Roasted
beautiful
coffee from Havana Coffee in Wellington. And yeah, I brewed with so I'd known Shu from Yeasty Boys for a little bit, and we brewed that with him, and it was a really popular beer, and it was actually the first beer that we started as Behemoth. We thought, well, you know, it was on as a home brewer with Yeasty Boys, it was in bus shelters, on billboards. It was kind of a big deal, called a competition called Wellington in a Pint, kind of named after Wellington in a Plate, which is the kind of restaurant month thing that Wellington does every year around about Beervana time. And we took it from there. I entered in true now Behemoth fashion. We carpet bombed that competition. I think I entered 12 beers, might have been 16 beers. And it was like some ridiculous percentage of it. And I think it was 8 beers, but they ended up being, there was like 16% of all the entries. But we got 4 in the top 32. We got 2 in the top 16, 2 in the top 8. And then one of them was the top 4 that got brewed with a commercial brewery, the Celia Way Brown Ale. The other one was actually the one that actually nearly won. Was called the Cuba Street Car Fire, which was 100% smoked malt with chipotle.
Oh.
So quite a few years ago, some nutter drove his car into Cuba Street, and if anyone knows about Cuba Street in Wellington, it's a pedestrian street, and set it on fire. So Cuba Street Car Fire, smoke and fire, was all meant to represent Wellington. I think I just had too much chili and put the judges off.
I think you have a bit of fun with your beer naming, don't you?
We do, yeah, absolutely.
Now, was it at that point when you were in top 4 that you thought, I'm going to make a bloody career out of this?
I'm not going to lie. I went into this going, this would be an amazing start to the brewing company that I had yet to name. So I was relatively deliberate. A lot of homebrewers went into this and just go, hey, this is a bit of fun. And I was like, well, I've quit my legal job to get into the brewing profession, so I'm not here to fornicate with arachnids.
Oh, I love that. I love that saying. Not here to fuck spiders, mate.
Yeah, I didn't know about your cussing terms, but you've set the scene for me now, so it's all good. So I actually thought it would be a really good way to jumpstart what we're doing. And I make no bones about, you know, being ambitious and wanting to grow a business, what was enough, not even a business at that point. But, you know, there's so many brewing companies out there and so many homebrewers who want to get into the industry that I was like, well, this would be a really awesome launching pad, and it was.
You know, what I love so much about doing these podcasts is that I learn so much about my guests' lives, their careers, their businesses, and all of that sort of stuff. And for me, I had absolutely no idea that you're a gypsy brewer. Can you believe that?
Yeah, well, I should have been on the same thing that you read about my beer glass collection and stuff like that as well. But we've brewed at more breweries than anyone else in New Zealand. There's quite a few gypsy brewers or contract brewers in New Zealand who brew in one location and maybe two, but we have. At the moment, we're brewing at 2, but we've brewed at 4 this year, and we've probably brewed at 12 different locations around New Zealand. Numerous reasons why we moved on size. Like, we've brewed at some breweries where we now produce more beer than they produce in their brewery still. So it's been one of those things where, we grow, we're taking up too much room. And now, so we'll get to this, but we crowdfunded early in the year and we should have our own brewery and brew pub, restaurant, bar and butchery open kind of March-ish next year.
Yeah, cool. We'll talk about that soon. Don't spoil my rundown here, mate. Like, I've got this all laid out, okay?
Well, you brought up with the Gypsy Brewer thing, mate, so I had to just get into what our plans are.
Hey, this is my show. We're going to go in the order that I wanted to go in. So I want to know, what made you go the route of the Gypsy Brewer?
Lack of capital. Started Behemoth on a very, very small amount of money. I mean, the amount of money I started Behemoth on, I could have bought maybe half of a fermenter if I was lucky. So it kind of, the contract brewing Gypsy Brewer route allowed us to brew. It was hard yards. We brewed one beer, we wait to get paid for that beer, which in the beer game can take quite some time. And then a couple of months later we'd brew another beer and do the same and wait to get paid from that. And then after that we got some pretty small scale investment on board, overdrafts and all that kind of stuff, and it just kind of built it from there. From like 1,000 liters every 2 months to over 500,000 liters last year. So the last 6 years, it's been a big change, big development. See,
that's what bloody annoys me, because you hear people say, "Oh, Gypsy Brewers have no skin in the game." Well, you might not have physical, equipment, but bloody hell, your heart is completely in it, because you are living from paycheck to paycheck or bill to bill and all that sort of thing.
Oh, absolutely. I understand that, and we do get a bit of flack even more here as a bit of tall poppy syndrome in New Zealand, the fact that we've done pretty well without having our own gear, but it is a logistical challenge producing a lot of beer without having the ability to control all aspects of it, and that's something that we are very much looking forward to soon. And also the whole skin in the game thing, I'll get to at some point. I've actually had physical skin in the game, but that is a very different story.
You brewed some great brews that you mentioned before.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you go in and brew as a gypsy, is it a collaborative process with the head brewer there, and do you learn from them, or is it more like, here you go, mate, here's the keys to the brewery, don't break anything, I'll see you tomorrow?
Yeah, no, it's never like that. I'm always very hands-on when we start working with a new brewery, because you've got to know the ins and outs of it and how recipe is going to be scaled and what kind of, sometimes we use their house yeast, sometimes we use something that we bring in ourselves. There's so many ins and outs, but I can tell you that there are very few breweries, good breweries, that will just let someone come and use their kit, because they're responsible for it. Health and safety wise. every single brewery in the world's got their own ticks, and so it's pretty hard for someone just to come and brew on people's breweries afresh. But it's really working with them and seeing what their efficiencies are and dialing with their equipment and really working with them on scaling recipes and working with how fermentation works with their specific fermenters. So it's just a host of things before you start brewing with someone to make sure that you're in sync and the beer's going to turn out the way that you want it to.
Yeah, mate, brilliant segue when you mentioned OH&S thing, because let's talk about this accident you had when you were at 8 Wide in 2015. I mean, you had serious burns to, I think it was 40% of your body, whatever it was, because of an explosion with a brew kit. Mm-hmm. How does something like that happen?
Yeah, so there was a lot of investigations and stuff that happened to it. We're pretty sure it was just a blocked, the flume got blocked in the boil kettle, and we went to do a 10-minute addition for our in-your-face double IPA, which we haven't brewed for a couple of years, but we're brewing again this week, actually.
Nice.
Come out again soon after a couple of years hiatus on it. It blocked it was 5 kg of Columbus. We were chucking it at 10 minutes towards the end of the boil. And we opened the lid and, pretty close to 1,000 or 1,500 litres worth of boiling wort spouted out at us and jumped off a couple of metre brewing platform. And, there's a lot of blanks in my memory there, but, it was don't want to go into too much detail, but I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemies. And I don't like my worst enemies, but I wouldn't wish it on them. So it's a pretty horrible experience.
I'm feeling for you, because I remember one night when my wife was, you know, similar but not as bad as what you had, but same kind of idea. My wife was cooking a stew in a pressure cooker and opened it before it was ready and got frigging covered in the stuff. And it, same as you, you know, burnt her body really, really badly. But like, you take that to a 1,000 litres of hot boiling wort, fuck. Mate, you're lucky to be here.
Oh, absolutely. Like, it happened on the 10th of September, and every year for the last few years, 10th of four years, 10th of September is always pretty meaningful one for me and Jason Bathgate, who was the brewer at 8 Wide and now is McLeod's Brewing and my favorite brewing company in New Zealand that I don't own. we're just thankful to be here. And you know, we've got scars and we always have those scars, and I was in hospital for 5 weeks. He was in hospital for 7, and had to wear compression gear for well over a year. But we've both, you know, we've kind of saying we're the 2.0 versions, and, you know, we've come through this, and it's just pushed us on to bigger and better things, because we could easily not be here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously that was a pretty extreme accident, but do you think that Gypsy Brewers are slightly more at risk due to, you know, maybe moving around and working with unfamiliar equipment?
Yes, if you're doing it in the way that you had suggested, where you have got the keys to the castle and you just go ahead. I mean, we were brewing with the head brewer there. It was just, you know, we were just putting in a hop addition. It was, something that's made – it was a freak accident that's made people a little bit more aware, probably using a bit more anti-foam and maybe leaving the hatch to the kettle open while boiling more now. Emergency showers have been put in at so many more breweries and around New Zealand since the accident. And I've noticed that just from visiting breweries that, I mean, it made very much made New Zealand brewing news, but the amount of people that I've met from Australia and Europe and America who heard about our accident is pretty amazing. It definitely just put the spotlight a bit more on you know, brewing is a manufacturing job, and you know, there are inherent dangers that come with it. So it just makes sure that people are taking the proper precautions and it's being treated seriously.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're dealing with boiling liquids.
Yeah. Mate, so just recount for me, how many brews have you brewed at and how many recipes have you brewed over the last 5 years or so?
God, I'm going to say 8 to 10 breweries just because I can't be bothered naming them all off. but I think – I don't think our Untappd is 100% reliable, but I think that we're pretty close to 170 different beers that we've done in the last 6.5 years.
Yep.
This year I think we would have done 50 brand new – packaged beers, which I'm almost certain is more than anyone else in the Southern Hemisphere. Pretty much close to a new can, mainly cans, a few bottles per week this year. So we've definitely ramped it up and planning to do even more so next year.
Shit. It's a lot of bloody beer, I've got to say.
Yeah, it's a decent amount.
Yeah. Now, in 2016, you bought your beers across to Australia. You'd been in Australia a little bit beforehand, but this time in doing it on a more permanent basis, you had to take on a new name. Now, explain for me why.
Yes. So we're just talking about heaps of stuff I hate talking about now, eh?
Sorry. We'll draw a line in the sand there. And you decided to move on and you called the brand Chur, obviously. And I'm assuming that was kind of a no-brainer for you because you already had your really awesome, you know, your cool, bald, ogre-looking fella. He's a great mascot, isn't he? Did you design him yourself?
Well, no, I didn't personally design him. So we worked with a firm in Wellington originally and had that concept. Those friends of my dad. So our original concepts cost us a case of beer and a bottle of wine.
Oh, really?
And a bottle of bubbly because the owner didn't drink beer. it all came from that. And it was just meant to be. So our signature beer is Chur New Zealand Pale Ale. Chur is an incredibly New Zealand word.
Yep.
Means cheers or something that's cool.
Same thing.
So we're like, well, we're doing a New Zealand hot pale ale. Let's do the most New Zealand word we can think of. And then our character's name's Churley because he's based after Chur. And now he has – we didn't mean for him to be like the mascot. We just thought, oh, this monster's doing this thumbs up and that's really cool for Chur. And then he's dressed up as, you know, coming on to 200 different things now.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah, he's just been a really cool vehicle to kind of convey the fun that we want to convey with our beer. And that's what we're all about, is just making beer fun.
I bloody love him. I think anybody who's a beer lover would know the character that we're talking about. And you guys have had so much fun with him over the years. I've seen him as just lately he was Hulk Hogan. You've had him as the dude from
Very
Big
right
Lebowski.
Just over last weekend.
Yeah, I saw that just recently. You had the Big Lebowski dude. Trump, of course. And one of my favorites was when he was Cheech and Chong. Do you have a favorite?
No, I don't think I have any favorites of it. Like, there's stuff that's always been fun. We've done some really, you know, we've done – I grew up working in movie theaters after that paper. And so I'm kind of I've grew up spending too much time watching movies. So we do a lot of pop culture, movie references, music references.
I love it.
No one sent us a cease and desist yet, which is always nice.
I thought Donald Trump might have tweeted you.
Man, we wouldn't have been able to keep up if that was the case. I think he's got bigger fish to fry, especially at the moment.
Did that one cause a bit of a shitstorm for you? Did you get a bit of notoriety about it?
Yeah, we did. So we did dump the Trump before he was elected. I think we originally done it maybe it was even around about the time he got the nomination. And then it was just keg only, and we kind of made a little bit of a stir with the keg only one, nothing really serious. We bought out the bottles a few times right up until the election. And it was a joke because it's like, Donald Trump's going to be elected president. This is ridiculous. And then when it happened, I was like, oh my fuck. God. I was, because I'm just a miracle politics geek. I was just like, this is stupid. So after that happened, we started doing impeachment sour ale, which we've made ever since. And I've just pretty much told everyone that we're going to keep making impeachment until he's impeached or some way leaves office. So at the moment, we're in the middle of his impeachment hearing right now, is a recording of this podcast. And we've just had an interview with like a newspaper in New York and stuff about like Trump, anti-Trump beers around the world. That was kind of what was happening. And then we're like, okay, it's been a year and a half he's been in office. Let's re-release Dump Trump because it didn't work. And let's just bring it out again, even though I said that we weren't going to because it wasn't funny anymore. And I came to find out that doing a beer called Dump the Trump before someone's president and after they're president are quite different. So we had a massive reaction when we released it 15, 18 months ago. And we had a whole bunch of hardcore Trump fans from the States give our Facebook page one star. So we had 200 or 300 of them give us one star, and then that made New Zealand news and then a bit more international news websites and stuff like that. And we had 10 times as many Kiwis giving us five stars. So it balanced out. I think we're like a 4.5 star average because of how many Kiwis went into bat for us.
Oh, and I love it.
I didn't even have to comment on our Facebook page because we had all the Kiwis going into bat and just trolling these Trump tards. And it was if you go back, if you want to kill like a good 6 hours of your life to go read the thousands of comments it did, I think we had 120,000 people visit our Facebook page in that week. It was on New Zealand TV and radio and news websites, and it was pretty mental. Awesome. But we'd also just done a very, very large batch of this beer that had gone out all around New Zealand, and I think in New Zealand supermarkets it was the biggest selling single skew craft beer in New Zealand for that month or something like that. It was crazy. So the funny thing is that they were really trying to take us down, and they did the exact opposite, which I find highly amusing.
It's unreal. Mate, this is why I do this podcast, because of stories like that. That is just absolutely brilliant. I reckon there's people that are listening to this right now that would have had no idea about that story. So thank you for sharing. That's unreal.
No worries. It was an interesting moment in my life for sure.
Now, let's have a little bit of a chat about the here and now, because back on your side of the Tasman, things must be going pretty great, because you've begun construction of the new brew pub. I saw late October in the restaurant. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah. It's so we started looking for a building for a brew pub without even having the funding for it a long time, just after my wife and I got married. So we kind of told each other that we're not going to start looking for sites until we got back from our honeymoon, and then it's all been all on since then. and so that's about just over two and a half years. So we looked at a site. We looked at 32 sites in Auckland over 18 months, and then we found our perfect site, which we're in now. And there were a lot of hurdles of getting that over the line, like having the landlords replace the roof and all these kind of things. And we've been in there for a year, but we did a crowdfunding campaign with FledgeMe. It was the most stressful thing I've ever done in my life, going out and asking people to invest in your company and put everything out there and bear everything for everyone to see. After a very stressful 5 or 6 weeks, we raised a couple of million dollars, and we are starting construction on our new brewery, bar, restaurant, and nose-to-tail butchery. So my wife is a butcher. She's been on the New Zealand butchery team for the last couple of years, and she owns a cured meat company called A Lady Butcher, Purposeful Meats. So we're going to be doing whole nose-to-tail butchery and using every part of it and changing the menus as we go through the animals, and 24 taps. So we're going to be a very beer and meat matching focused venue. So yeah, we've started destruction of what the old muffler shop. So we've started knocking down some of the walls and stuff, and now we're just going through kind of council restraints and getting brewery quotes and stuff together, and we're hoping to have everything open and running by March 2020 is the aim at the moment.
Well, there you go. We managed to get all of Andrew's story recorded, even though I was unable to actually hear the final part of the interview where he was telling us about the new Churley's Brew Pub and Eatery. It's a real shame because the venue sounds awesome and I would have loved to explore that just a little bit more. Perhaps we can do that on a future episode when New Zealand's internet service gets upgraded. Even though we had all sorts of technical issues with this chat, I'd bloody love chatting with Andrew about his time in the industry. I just want to thank him for his efforts to help me recover our lost audio. I hope you enjoyed it, and until we talk again in this great big craft beer land of ours, cheers to great beers. Thanks for tuning in to another Beer Healer interview. I really hope you guys enjoyed the episode as much as I did. If you want to follow along with more Beer Healer content, you can check out my Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram pages. Just search Beer Healer, or you can visit beerhealer.com. If you like the podcast, can you please help me spread the word by subscribing and rating it and sharing it with your beer-loving friends?